Welcome everyone to this episode of the experiences of a lifelong monk. I would like to reveal something to you at the outset of today's very, very impactful experience which I was lucky to make. Spiritual life should not be a spectator sport. Spiritual life can only be fully understood if we make an experience of it. Because the subjects of spiritual life are highly subjective. They refer to the self, to our relationship with the more than human dimension, with God, not a Hindu God, not a Christian God, not a Muslim God, just God. Therefore, these spiritual experiences are highly, let us say, can only be made as subjective experiences. They can't be fully communicated through words. They have to be made and transform the heart, then you know what it is. But talking about them is very valuable because it can motivate us. It can give us hints in which way to move. It can perhaps inspire us, even take away our ressentiments, as we say in Europe, our reservations. Hearing from someone about their spiritual experience is very, very valuable, still very valuable, because they give us the eyes to see the things we usually don't see or contemplate in our lives. Having said this, I want to go now into, I would say, my most transformative spiritual experience, which I made in Tibet while on a sacred pilgrimage around a mountain Kailash. A pilgrim is someone who has a purpose. He goes there on pilgrimage in order to move forward in his spiritual life and leave certain things behind. At the outset of this pilgrimage, which was the most strenuous one which I have made so far, you need sherpas, you need to cross the Himalayan mountains, you need to negotiate with the Chinese authorities to come into the country at these very, let us say, these passes high up in the mountains. You need a truck to transport you and the gear, the tents, and also your vegetables when you are vegetarian up there high in this high plateau of Tibet. You mostly find either meat, yak meat, or this barley flour, which is made for tsampa, but tomatoes, cauliflowers, potatoes, etc., which a vegetarian is so much used, you have to carry it with your truck. plus the tents, plus the sherpas, plus the spades, plus the all the gear which you need for a proper expedition. All this goes into the trucks, and then you have your jeep and drive for endless hours over the high plateau. I had a motive why I wanted to make this strenuous pilgrimage, which would bring me to Mountain Kailash. I had considered the three reasons for which we people can't experience spiritual growth. These three reasons I have heard and observed are the same for everyone in all cultures. First of all, people are too busy. Second of all, they are too proud. And the third reason why people don't experience spiritual growth is they are too complacent with what they have at the moment. Now, someone who wants to have a spiritual experience, he wants to get off that fence where he is too busy, too proud, and too complacent, and he wants to break out of the box of his ordinary life and then go into the rawness of life, I could say. It is said pilgrims are moving towards a goal to which only the compass of the soul can show the way. So back in business in Germany, I was so busy and somewhat also complacent. I could hide behind my day-to-day responsibilities, the practical achievements of founding and starting projects and writing books. And I was busy in my own little world. And to be quite honest with you, avoided this deep soul searching that is required for genuine spiritual advancement. You cannot do that deep soul searching when you are so busy in what you do, and if you are quite complacent with this. Yes, that's my life. Maybe you're not complacent, you're not satisfied with it, but you are resigned to it, at least. On the pilgrimage, you can't hide behind the day-to-day responsibilities and your practical achievements and so on. There's no place. We were driving for hours, really. Hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, more hours. Through this high plateau where I don't know how the drivers knew where they were going, because there were no roads, or roads which were not more than just a track of a jeep which had gone before you. The empty plains were sometimes dotted with herds of yaks, driving like this for 2 weeks, we needed to face our inner situation. They say your life is out of balance when you suddenly end up with free time and you just don't know what to do with yourself in that free time. Because all these things which keep you busy are no longer there. So I was during that time, the busy Swami from Germany, the one who is announced like our wonderful host announced us today, Mr. Busy, Mr. Book Writer, Mr. Lecturer, all this was no longer there. I was in a jeep together with three other people, and our minds all the time. Now, this busyness, this is good, because it forces you to go on your spiritual quest and prepares you for genuine responses, or let us say, spiritual experiences. It prepares you. I gave you reasons why people don't experience spiritual growth, busyness and complacency, or perhaps it's better to say being resigned to what we do. But there is a third reason, which is called pride, the ego. And let us be clear, that ego doesn't go away when you become a monk. You can have a big monk ego. and that's a blockage. I want to read to you something which a good friend of mine, Keshava Swami, wrote. A proud person can't love. Pride transforms us into little gods ruling over our imaginary kingdoms. The thought of being a servant becomes more and more alien, creating a disposition fueled by expectation and demands. C.S. Lewis, who is well known to Tzipi, has said, a proud man is always looking down on things and people. And of course, as long as you are looking down, you cannot see something that is above you. Nice, no? As long as you look down, you cannot see that which is above you. And this I needed to learn during my spiritual experience, to see what is above me. We arrived in Tachen, that's a little village tucked away on the foothills of the sacred mountain Kailash. I once gave a slideshow in New York about my journey, but in case you were not there, and I think that's most of you, Mount Kailash is a sacred mountain which is a very interreligious mountain. The pilgrimage paths of three world religions are going around it. The Hindus, Jains, Burnpo, and Buddhists. They all go there and look for different blessings there. I remember when we started out with our pilgrimage, it was at 7 o'clock in the morning. We had arrived in the afternoon and settled into our little rooms. There were no real showers there because it's so cold. No one except crazy Westerners think of showers in Tibet. The next morning, I somehow had managed to get some hot water and taken a bucket shower. Around 7 o'clock, we walked. I remember I saw before me a couple from Tibet who were dressed up really festive. They had pearls in their hair and they had a horse. I asked them from where they were coming. They couldn't communicate back in English, but you know, with hands and feet you can also talk. Somehow I understood they come from the region of Kham, where there are good warriors, and they said goodbye to me when they left the ordinary pilgrim track and just walked left high up on the mountain. They wanted to go to that monastery where there is a conch shell. It's something like a horn which you blow, and then the sound, this is how the Buddhists see it, it goes to your ancestors and awakens and frees them from a terrible situation in which they are you know, in Christian terms, that it saves people from hell who are there. So I had wonderful experiences. I will not be able to tell you everyone I met and everyone I saw. I only remember the path went up all of a sudden, and we went into a fork, and then I arrived before a rock which had a footprint of Lord Buddha. I had a guide with me. Guide means a written guide, a book guide. By now, the people I started out with were in front of me. And yes, I stopped at that footprint, and I somehow got from my backpack matches and a little light, and I offered an aratik to the footprint of Buddha. I mean, this is a chance, you know. All over Asia, you find these footprints where the enlightened has walked, and it is said if you pay attention to this footprint by either worshipping him or sitting down there and meditating or just collecting yourself in some ways, you will obtain the blessings of the enlightened one. So I did it. I'm very open to these ancient rituals and ceremonies. As I was completing my worship, I saw three pilgrims huffing and puffing up the path. It is a small path, only this wide, like the door perhaps, or a little narrower. And they were conversing in American English, and I understood these are Americans. I remember one had a backpack and a hose from which he was from time to time sipping water. I thought, wow, this is a typical American invention. he looked as if he was walking on the moon. He was fully equipped with everything. And yes, they asked, oh man, what is going on here? And I said, the footprint of Buddha. Wow, what are we supposed to do here? And I said, well, you can do whatever your heart tells you, but if you want to know what I did a ceremony. Well, we like to do a ceremony. So I guided them into an aratik ceremony. You know, your people from America can be very open also. That's a lovable quality of these personalities. And I guided them, and they were very satisfied with my priestly services. And then they asked me what I, you know, about my name, my country, why I was there. And I told them that my name is Sachinandan Swami and everything. And they said, well, why are you here? And I said, to collect the blessings of Lord Shiva. Wow! They were so innocent and pure and curious. Everything was, the word was wow, which was used there. I felt encouraged to talk and go on talking about Shiva. And I'd read a lot in the Sanskrit literature, and every 15 seconds I got a big wow. I still remember, and I felt good about these vows. Finally, there were some people in this desert who appreciated my knowledge. This is how I felt as I was going on. I began to sense that there's something absolutely wrong. did not know what could it be. But, you know, I felt so absolutely out of place, and I couldn't fathom. I was talking about spiritual subjects. Is this not good? And I felt so absolutely wrong and small-minded and miserable. And then I thought, but why? I'm helping these people who have so much appreciation. Look at their vocal response to what I say. Everything is, wow, this is very good. But I felt so absolutely wrong. It was the tension inside began to grow, and I had no idea what was wrong until I looked up. And then for a moment, not a short moment, I saw that there were clouds whirling around the top of the Mount Kailash, and then they cleared, and I saw with these two eyes the face of Shiva looking so absolutely disgusted and disturbed down on me. I still did not know what had I, have I done wrong. Is this something? All of a sudden, I can only explain it to you like this. I felt sucked out of my body and brought high up, perhaps something like 20 meters or 25 meters. I had no measurement there. And I was looming over my body and looking down. And I could see what was not right. Here I was. I had made this pilgrimage to become free from pride, to become free from complacency and my busy normal mind. And here I was doing the same thing which I professed is, I think, the English word, which I wanted to give up. I was filling my self with the admiration of others. I was boosting the balloon of my ego, or allowing my ego to blow up and inflate like anything. Or here I am, the knowledgeable spiritualist who tells these pilgrims what they should do, and who in a slightly bemused German way looks down on the people and whom he explaining things to, thinking they are a little ignoramus, that's a little ignorant. And I could see, my dear everyone, that I was committing the cardinal mistake of false ego, of inflating myself. I've often described these people who give lectures or who give charity as energy vampires. While a vampire is known to drink blood, these people, they can be teachers, they can be seminar givers, they inflate their self-worth with the neediness of their audience, or their needs of their audience, and they thing, that they do something good, while they only self-serve their own neediness for recognition and fame and so on. Yeah, so here I was, out of my body, looking down on the scene where I was talking like Mr. Know-it-all. And I looked to the mountain, and Shiva didn't like it. He had given me that special treatment. After I recognized my mistake, I fell back into my body. I can only describe it like this. I was totally impacted by the situation. I felt really bad. And I said, I have to go, I have to go, I have to go. What's wrong, man? And I said, "What is, you know," I lied to them. I said, loose motions. You know, that's something you get in Asia quite often. You can't contain the food any longer. It violently and forcibly is expelled from your body. And anyways, so I ran away from them. I said, please excuse me, please excuse me, please excuse me, please go on. I will be gone. And I ran into the wilderness, and that was physically a mistake. That was a mistake. You can't run when you are so high up there, because the air is very thin. That means there's not so much oxygen. So I ran until I got problems in breathing, and I fainted and fell on the ground. I do not know how long I was lying there. When consciousness came back to me, I had understood for the first time how the ego binds us to our own narrative, our own self-imagined kingdoms, how it gives us the wrong understandings in life, how it filters reality. I could understand all these, and I have never ever been able to forget the gift of Mount Kailash to me, or the gift of Lord Shiva to me. Later, after I had finished my pilgrimage around, it took 3 days to walk around, I was happy to go to the lake. It's Mount Sarovara, a beautiful lake. It is said in this highest lake which is there on this planet, that's a sacred lake, and from there Shiva sometimes comes and reveals things to the pilgrims. And I remember sitting there for a whole day. I was really marked by the experience, and I sat there, and I believe I chanted my mantras, the Hare Krishna mantra, for the first time with sincerity. I switched off my mind and my little world totally. I went with my consciousness directly to the mantra and the personalities of the mantras, Radha and Krishna, and chanted and for a whole day. And towards the end of it, of the day, or it's difficult to remember now concretely, but towards the end of it, late afternoon, was able to see for the first time what it means that I'm really an eternal soul, totally separated from the mind and the body. And I really feel that this is the second gift of Lord Shiva. He first needed to show me my ego and how I was bound by the strings of attachment to a false role. And after I had seen it so vividly, I mean, when you're out of your body, then you really see things which are no longer so constrained, and so on. And yes, I was very, very much able to see, have a glimpse into the eternity. And during this time, I looked at what is the feeling of a genuine spiritual experience. Because, like all of us, I was revisiting it. Was this, what was it really? I must say the first quality is this unexpressible nature of it. The second is when I felt both when I was detached from the body and looked down and could see everything, I felt a feeling of great peace and almost an inner silence descending into me. That became especially pronounced when afterwards I sat down for more for my spiritual practice at the Lake Manasarova. I was meeting also a transcendental personality, that is Shiva, who had a message to me. That's often in a genuine spiritual experience, you meet mentors who make everything possible. There was also something where I was looking back into my life and looking forward, and I could see, yes, something needed to change. And finally, I was returning into the body and using it. It felt almost when I went, you know, when I fell into this body again and began to run away from the people who were listening to me, I really felt like a newborn child experimenting with his vehicle, the body. I had, of course, done this mistake of just running too long, too fast on an altitude which is too thin. I normally know these things from previous visits to the Himalayas. There are a few ground rules which you learn when you go into high altitude situations. But yes, I was a newborn child at that time when I had returned. Yeah, this is my experience which I wanted to share with you. When I was preparing for this seminar, my assistant showed me a message from our host, our Hari. I know him as Hari Prasad. The note said, please remind him that he already spoke about his out-of-body experience in the hospital when he had a surgery. And I said, yes, I know, this is a different out-of-body experience which I have in mind. My dear everyone, what if it is true that you are not the body? What if it is not just an intellectual exercise, which we do during the Bhagavad Gita seminars and the seminars which are conducted by Abbild? What if you are an entirely different personality who by his bad fortune is chained to this experience of being a man or a woman in a specific country with a specific nationality? When I had this experience where I was pulled out of the body, I could really see I'm different than the role which I'm performing. And when I was sitting later on the lake and I had this experience of me being an eternal being, it was really highly convincing and educating. I can always go back to these experiences. They have not left me, and I'm arranging my life at the moment consciously in a way that gives me more freedom, more space to live the real life, the life that is beyond the dream of material existence. Good. I'm saying all this with a smile because the real life is so much more wonderful than the false life. Good. I have come to my end here of my presentation. I would be now very happy to give back the microphone to our gracious host. Please guide us how we should continue.
Thank you so much, Dachinandana Swami. Priceless. Viji, please ask your question.
Yes.
I realized.
Yes, now I can hear you. Yes.
I wanted to start by saying thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, and it's really been a blessing to be able to hear from you these past few weeks. One of the things that you mentioned today that really struck a personal note for me is the mention of when you remove everything that keeps you busy and you don't know what to do with yourself, that's a sign of imbalance in your life. And that is a place that I have found myself more than once, and a place that I find myself again. And so I wanted to humbly ask advice you would offer about what to do when we're in this situation to return ourselves to balance.
What a wonderful question, Vijay. Every one of us needs to have a prayojana bodh. If we have a prayojana bodh, we will not experience this emptiness when all the busyness falls to the side. Prayojana bodh is an ultimate spiritual goal. Yes, we pursue path, we pursue things in this life which belong to the human experience, a professional life, maybe a family life, a life in relationship to our near and dear ones, our friends, and so on. And these all belong to the human experience, but we should also know that there is a dimension, I like to call it the more than human dimension, the dimension in which we find all these things which have ultimate value, God, our relationship with God, our true self beyond these masks and roles which we play, truly inspiring friends who will sometimes be like potters in our life. A potter is a very has a very interesting thing. When he makes his pottery, I just happen to have this here, he will have one hand in the pottery to support it, and the other hand he will use to beat his pottery. So a true friend is someone who supports us, but who also corrects us, who inspires us, who challenges us at times. Challenges sounds so awful, but you know, who motivates us, who asks the right question. So all these things, the soul, deep spiritual friendships, who help us grow, God, all these belong to this category of Prayojanbodh. Now, if that category is empty, and we only have our day-to-day responsibilities full, and when the day-to-day responsibilities fall to the side, then what do we do? We have nothing else. But when we have some projects here in the Prayojanbodh, then we will say, wow, now I start my real life. Oh, what was it? Yeah, this book I need to read. Wow. Then my phone call to my spiritual friends is there. And my travel has to be done. My pilgrimage is waiting. I always wanted to go up the Ganga to the source of the Ganga. Wow, this is now the time I can consider this and make plans for this. And my spiritual practice is also, now I can go to my spiritual practice. Wow, I can meditate for 2 hours. Imagine. And you will have a full place. I think people only have one category full in life. That's the day-to-day responsibility. But the things that matter most, this is empty categories. So you might have to do something for that Prayojanbodh, Viji. By the way, that is for everyone. Don't feel bad. And you are already pursuing spiritual life with this upbuilt community. So, but perhaps more investment in that category is required. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I particularly appreciated the examples. Thank you.
Lalit, would you kindly ask your question?
Hare Krishna. My question to you was, how do you keep the learnings from these experiences alive so that you're not faltering in the future? Because I think for me, sometimes I'm relearning the same thing over and over again in life. And so I wanted to know what it is that you do to keep that practice or keep those learnings alive.
I'm just now writing a meditational book. I'm actually writing it already for a good amount of time. I want it to be the best book which ever has come out from my writing table. So I'm very critical with the writing. And there I address a subject matter. It's called "Let Old Words Open New Worlds." What do I mean with this slogan? there's something like contemplative reading, where you read wisdom texts, Lalit, and as you read them, you don't read them, you stop when something strikes you. And then you contemplate the meaning of what you have just read by asking questions like, how does this relate to my life? And as you do this, your perspectives changes, and you again, your view is again free from is free for the far-reaching perspective. I don't know if you have this in your country, but we have cars which have the lights, front lights, they go like this down, but then when there are no cars there, they go into the distance and you can see so much, even though it is night. It is not allowed to use these far-reaching light when there is another car coming, because it will blind the driver. I think reading does this for us, contemplative reading. It lifts our vision from the what is directly in front of us, our vision that gets us through the day, so to say, and it lifts it up and broadens the horizon, and we can all of a sudden see everything that was hidden to our view when we had this, let us say, frontal vision on. This happens when you read, but you need to read in a contemplative way. You read a wisdom text, then you stop, and you almost mentally chew on it, you ruminate on it. And as you do this, these texts will provide you with what is called in Indian philosophy a sporta. These words will all of a sudden expand, or the word which is often used is explode like a firecracker, and show you so much which is there. They show you the spiritual dimension, and then you recognize, oh, I experienced something 5 years ago. Oh, yes, all this comes in that spiritual space. It comes. The problem is, Lalit, our vision, when our vision is, here comes my new English word, myopic, you know, small-minded, then we will not be able to see really these spiritual things. But once we look on the spiritual platform, everything comes back. Our, if you so want, our vision widens, and all of a sudden, oh yes, 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 oh, and so on. I do this every day, Lalit. I'm going in the morning out. I have a little backpack with me, and I have a cushion there. I have my spectacles with me, and two books and a pen. And then I will go to a bench. A beautiful bench. One day, if you come here, I will show you my favorite bench. And there we, there I read these ancient words that open new worlds for me, or which broaden my horizon, where I see all this. And I see my life not fragmented, in other words, just the date which is now there, or the time of my life. I see everything, even when I started my childhood and lived on an island. Everything is there in that spiritual vision, because my eyes have gone up and are no longer focused down. So contemplative reading. Read something, then second step, stop when something strikes you or is you feel that is of significance for me. Then stay with this, ask questions like, how does this relate to my life? And then you can go to the third step. You can either hold this in your memory, or if it is something that is of such practical value, then you can apply it in your life. And also what helps very much is to talk to someone else. If there's something you can't apply, second best is you talk about it to someone and share it, and then it will become, all these things help that the words come alive for you. Contemplative reading.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Wonderful. So we'll come to a close here for this portion of the program, but I want to give you the final word, Satchinanda.
Yeah. I would be very happy to if I could leave you today with a thought. It is said the two most revealing incidences in a person's life is either when he is under complete stress or in solitude. Now, we don't want anyone here to get into this total stress zone. It's better if you go into solitude. Why are these two moments the most revealing moments in our life? Well, either under full stress, not just the normal stress, oh my God, the underground, oof, I have to run to get my underground journey in order. But, you know, not this normal stress, but really like, oh, things where your relationships break down, or, you know, really stress. They reveal what is inside. And solitude also. It's almost like, you know, when you have an orange, you have cut the orange and you have half an orange now. Stress squeezes the orange so that the juice comes out. But the same thing is done in a much, 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 much more relevant way when you go in solitude. You want to avoid these stressful moments in your life, go from time to time in solitude. Do exactly the opposite and you will get the strengths which will help you to live and to go with your life in such a way that you won't come into these terrible situations which we want to avoid. So I recommend to all of us, let's go to our favorite bench tomorrow. Here we are still, here is already getting late in Germany. We are 7 o'clock is our time now. I don't know where you are. Good benches are in Central Park if you are in New York. I have personally sampled some benches with Vipin and Michael and Rasanath and Hari Prasad. I've sampled. There's also good shade available, and you can go into some solitude there and take a good book with you. Something you always wanted to read, Viji, something that helps you to focus and then ruminate about these thoughts, ruminate is perhaps not the best word here, but reflect on this, what you read, and let these old words open new worlds for you. That is my message in parting.
Thank you so much, Satchidananda Swami. Such a privilege to have you with us, and we'll be back with him next week for our final of the 5-part series of the Spiritual Experiences of a Lifelong Monk. So everyone, please join us and invite any friends or loved ones to be with us as well. And we'll have full Q&A next week. So for those of you who need to go, thank you so much for being with us. And for those who can stay with us now for more Q&A, we welcome you. Vipin, please.
Thank you, Satchidananda Swami. I guess I should spotlight myself, which feels weird, but so that you can see.
Yes, yes.
Satchidananda Swami, I had two questions that were related to this point that you made about filling yourself up with the admiration of others, which I find is also of a habit of my own and maybe relevant to many of us. When you realized that you no longer wanted to fill yourself with the admiration of others, what did you replace that with? Because it feels like there becomes a void all of a sudden. If that's what you're used to filling yourself up with, then what did you fill yourself up with instead when you realized you no longer wanted to invest in that? And then the other thing in your story, you had said you zoomed up and you saw that you were committing this cardinal sin of filling yourself. And so when you came back, you had realized that you're not this body, but a soul. And I was curious, that leap, I know you've been studying sacred texts for a long time, but for me, that connection isn't so strong that seeing myself fill myself up with the admiration of others or as an ego and all of a sudden realizing, well, I'm not this body. Can you share a bit more of that realization that clicked for you in that moment?
Mm-hmm. These are two questions. I would just like to start with the second, because then it's out of the way. Vipin, this experience of leaving the body, so to say, and seeing it from above, talking and interacting with these curious pilgrims, these curious visitors to Mountain Kailash, was a very important experience for me, because if I'm able to see the body from above, then I am neither the body nor the brain inside the body. The brain was still located 20 meters down, 20 meters underneath. But here I was, totally separated from it. And after the initial shock of seeing Lord Shiva's angry expression, or you know, he was correcting me, I felt so much peace and free from all things. I was floating there over the body and over, I would say I must have been 35 years old at that time, I was floating over 35 years of German history, you know, my German history. And I was separate from it, and that felt relieving. I must say, I really entered into this peaceful state, which is the state of the soul that is no longer identified with the narrative of the body and the mind. When I was in later at the bank of the lake and had this beautiful experience of me being eternal, it was really I have never forgotten this, Vipin. It was so graphic, so clear, so absolutely pacifying, so absolutely inspiring. I was really, how do you say, in my constitutional position, in my real nature. Now, yes, when we come back from that into the body, we have to be careful that the old mechanisms don't work. An old mechanism, which we all have as conditioned souls, is we human beings are social beings, and we thrive on the admiration and appreciation and recognition of others. We thrive so much that it becomes like a drug, which brings us into a life that is no longer authentic, that is no longer my life. It is a life where we fulfill societal expectations or the expectations of others. A crowd pleaser has really forgotten himself. He has gone away from his nature, and he has become a number in the circus, you know. Number means a performance in the circus of life. Yet, if we have not found our authentic path and ourselves, that's all what we have. Just like we were discussing in the earlier question of Viji, if we have not invested into our Prayojana boat, all we have is the question: am I liked by others? See, it's a psychological need to be liked and loved by others, because to some degree, no human being can do it alone. He needs friends. He needs farmers to grow the food. He needs a society in which he grows up, in which he learns, in which he fills the tank of his car. You know, we are social beings who work in an intricate network of society, and which this network maintains us. So it comes quite easy to us that we think the better I do in the network, the more I please, the more recognition I have, the more accomplishments I obtain for which others will recognize and respect me, the more I am fine. But we may be light years away from our true self, our true identity. In the new book, I write about this, that I actually became a monk because of a little slit of paper on which my best friend had written a question. Because I come from a well-established German family, I had many opportunities in life So I try to become a violinist and identify with that, a filmmaker and identify with that, an adventurer and identify with that, only to find out that I was really not identical with my identifications. I felt something is missing. So my good friend Lorenz had watched me, and he had somehow taken to meditation. One day, when he saw me, he said, "You know, I picked up a sentence which I want to give you as a gift." And he gave me that slit of paper, and it said, "Who are you when everything that is not you falls away?" Wow! I thought, that's a question. Who am I when everything that is not me falls away? And I decided to find out who I am when all my roles and my faces which I had put on are not, who am I beyond this? I made a decision to go for 1 year into an ashram and find out by spiritual practice. And you know what I found out, Vivin? In the ashram, I adopted a new role. The hungry ego was still so undernourished. I tried to become the best monk, the best austere person, the best orator, the best this and that. And then I met a real saint, and saintly, I can only call him Mr. Saint. He was so different, and he had a different value system, and he in his association I just felt materialistic, the materialistic monk, you know. So I looked at him, I learned. He did not speak much. He spoke by his example. You know, he didn't. He was just a happy person. And, you know, Vipin, it is more important to become a human being than a human achiever. Everyone can run for these achievements and work themselves to death. But to become a kind human being, a compassionate person, a lover of God, that is so much more honorable, you know, than just taking on roles and roles and roles. And it never makes you satisfied. And guess what, Vipin? Others are not really impressed. Yes, they are impressed, but they are never your friends. You know, they live also this superficial life, and these people can't really love. You know, they are always under pressure and always somewhere else with their mind. They are not pleasant association. And they never love you fully. They are never with you totally. So my answer is, find your authentic path. That is something. Vipin, we are so much in this modern society. Yeah, we are so much used. We have all lost ourselves in our mind traffic, I would say. Therefore we are not authentic. So spiritual practice through going into this solitude and stopping this for some time, you begin to recognize and you are fine with it, with this authentic self. That's a little bit my 2 cents worth of answer to your question. But when we meet, we can talk more about it, because I do have a few atom bombs in my arsenal. And if you want, I will throw a few and then we can see what flies away from you. But that is for personal conversation.
Let me prepare myself.
Yes. I'm saying it humorously. I will never, I have too much respect and honor for you. And I used to do this when I was an arrogant monk. Now I'm a polite and cultured man, as much as possible.
I'm serious about getting the atom bombs. So we'll talk more.
We talk.
Thank you for another talk.
I'm so grateful to hear from you every week. My question was, in retrospect, what would have been the right or non-complacent way to answer the curiosity of all these Americans who were so wowed? Since there is such an imbalance of knowledge, you are in wisdom more so than they were at that time. And what would have been the response that would not have caused Shiva to pull you out of your body? Yeah.
When someone shares knowledge, he should always do that in the mood of a servant. Never as an enjoyer. And it's a mood, it's an internal disposition or inclination which makes all the difference. There, one activity can, which is done in one consciousness, may look exactly the same as an activity that is done in another consciousness. However, the effect on others and the effect on oneself is totally different. So, your good name is Pragya. Pragya, yes. Pragya. This is something which I believe all those who walk the spiritual path will learn sooner or later, to do whatever they do in the mood of a servant. And you can see the difference, you can feel the difference in your life, and others will also see it. Yes, this is it's a brief answer, but I hope it has answered your question to some degree of satisfaction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Krishna Sankaranda Swami, thank you so much for this really vivid experience you shared with us. My question is, how do you know that you are advancing in spirituality internally? Because externally, it seems like you can take on different spiritual activities, but how do you know that you are advancing internally or not?
I thank you very much, Nidhi, and I recognize you, and I see behind you are many products of your writing and your artwork. It is very nice to see you. Yes, coming back to your question now, how do you know that you are advancing? There is one work in our tradition, which I think you are familiar with. It's the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavat Purana, which deals with this question and gives everyone, so to say, a litmus test in their own hands by which they can see if they are truly advancing. There are three parameters by which you can measure your life to find out this. The first is you are, when you are advancing, you are accessing the feeling of submission or devotion. You begin to see there's something much higher than you. It depends on your path. I know you, and I know that you are a Krishna Bhakta. So you will see that your devotion to Krishna is developing. You feel these tender feelings in the heart. It's described almost like a melting of the heart, which makes the heart's inclination flow towards your object of worship. It's almost, imagine butter, when it becomes warmed, it will start to move. So when you make genuine experience, your bhakti begins to melt your heart in a way, and it moves towards Krishna. The second is a direct experience of Krishna. I told you a few, today I told you an experience of Shiva, but a direct experience of Krishna comes to you. You see him, it's almost as if his form comes out of the fog, so to say. Have you walked through fog? When you do, you sometimes see a person coming out of the fog, and at the beginning you may not recognize his personal features. You may not see the specific coat he wears, nor can you see his facial features, but as he comes closer, increasingly the form is revealed. So that direct experience of Krishna increases. And finally, Nidhi, you do not need to fight any longer with material attachments and cravings and so on, but they are you are naturally detached from the from these things, like this desire and that desire. You have a natural distance because you have experienced a higher taste that makes you crave more for the spiritual experiences, and it frees you, if you so want, from the constant pressure of material desires. I think, isn't it, we all know, sometimes we say, oh, I wish I wouldn't have this desire, but as long as I have this desire, perhaps it will drive me to attempt to fulfill it, you know. So you don't need to struggle any longer with it. You are, oh yeah, enough. Let the young people go in that direction. I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Last question will be from God.
From whom?
God.
From God.
Scott.
Sorry.
like
that would have been an atom bomb.
Yeah.
Thank you for the gift of your time. The question I had is, how did you see your body after your experience on Kailash? How did you take care of it afterward?
Wonderful, Scott. I saw it a little bit like a vehicle, a car. And are you owning a car yourself? You know, when you have a car, you know, okay, we need to take care now of the tires. We need to take care of this and that. But sometimes your heart is not so much into it. Oh no, I rather, you know, do something else than going with this car to the garage. I know it. I should, but you like to delay it a little bit because there are more interesting things to do. And that is very much, this analogy described a little bit what I experienced, plus I do experience this also. Even now I'm thinking, there's so many more interesting things to do than now go to some health practitioner and find what medicine I should take or what regiment I should do and so on. But Scott, I have come to understand one thing. My journey in life will ultimately be more undisturbed when I take care of it, of the body. So I have a bicycle at home, and I force myself to go with the bicycle and drive with the bicycle. I have a trampoline where every hour. Well, that's a theory, but as much as I remember, I jump up and down the trampoline. I have many things. I change my exercises because they are very, I can only do something that doesn't bore me to death. and I have looked at my diet and, I have learned that sugar is not good for me. I must take to a sugar-free diet because that's really the poison of the 20th century, and so on and so forth. In other words, I found out if I want to go to my goal, then it is good if the vehicle is not breaking down. So that is a little advice I can just give everyone. Yes, for us spiritual people, or those who are more, how do you say, fine and who appreciate thought, I can see in the back of you there are many interesting books. you are an avid reader. So I can see that you will most probably appreciate those times when the day is over and you can read an interesting, good book. But on the long run, you you will do better when you sometimes maybe make 15 minutes walk, brisk walk, and do these things. So, yes, I have been in situations where I really became detached from the body and I didn't want to take care of it. And so many people told me, please, please, please. And I said, oh, it's so boring, and so on. But on the long run, it is much, much better. Yes. I thank you very much for your kind question, Scott. And I think I remember seeing you in New York. Is that true? Did we perhaps...
I wasn't able to join you in New York, but I have met you in these sessions before. But thank you for remembering me.
You look familiar. Good. So yes. So I will stop here. I will give the microphone to our Hari Prasad. May I just say one thing? I would very much appreciate if all of you prepare yourself a little bit for the upcoming session next Wednesday. Perhaps you wanted to say that. You wanted to say it. Good. No. You are our MC. You please say. Good. Hari Prasad will prime us a little bit for that, so that it's lively. I see you also, Tsipi, there on the right side of my computer. You are prominently visible. Good. Oh, so many nice people. Yes, I have yes. Casey, wonderful. Tsipi, Scott, Susan Weiser, Mason, Parastu is there. Vrindavan Vilasini, George, our talented George, Patsy, John, Tia, amazing. Lisa, Francis, Avni Shah. Now we have moved to Pagya. Yes, I've seen Christina, Berta Jones, Adina, and C.V. Levskovsky. Valentina is there, Needy, iPhone number 11, Ananga, Amit, Aman, and so many. It keeps on jumping that I don't know. Rukmini, I can't believe my eyes. Is it you? Wonderful. Vikash, Viji, Nufo, Diksha, Krishna Murari from Los Angeles. I can't believe my eyes, Krishna Murari. This is an eternity back in the where we met you, and you still have that effulgence coming from your forehead, which shows your enthusiastic, inspired nature. Wonderful, wonderful. Ananga is there, Amit is there, Vikash is there, Nupur, Rukmini, I've seen already. It keeps on going up and down here. Bruno Del Ama, wonderful. But thank you all, you give genuine. And Vikash is there, yes. You give genuine pleasure to my heart. Genuine pleasure. It is so nice. And I do hope, really, take this with you, this takeaway, that there are these three things that stop us from experiencing spiritual growth. And they can all be addressed. Too busy, too proud, too complacent. They can all be addressed in the mood of Rumi. Rumi said, don't search for love. Search for the walls that you have built and that separate you from love. No? So you can also search for these blocks and then move on. Anyways, I never stop when I'm with people, so I better stop now and give it over to Hari Prasad.